Hi, Dave Emmer here. This is side two of For the Record program number 770. Bitcoinberg part three, Fool's Gold. This is being recorded on January 31st of the year 2014. We have been talking about Bitcoin, the new virtual currency about which people have been devoting so much time in print and on the air. We have been talking about, in particular, the fact that Bitcoin already is exhibiting all of the ills of the mainstream financial economy that it is supposed to circumvent, or to which it is supposed to represent a solution. Not only tape painting, pump and dump schemes, and the outright theft of vast amounts of Bitcoin, but as we have seen in side one, there is already an enormous pattern of economic concentration within the Bitcoin community. In other words, the 1% versus 99% dynamic is already apparently alive and well, or about to be delivered, so to speak, like a very large and unpleasant baby. Rosemary's Bitcoin baby, so to speak, that is well on its way. It already is a concentration of ownership that is already very much present within the Bitcoin community. What we're going to do in side two is to examine at some length how the Bitcoin milieu is overlapping and actually is merging with that of the milieu of Eddie Snowden, Eddie the Friendly Spook, as I call him. Before we get to some of those areas of overlap, I want to note that Bitcoin has yet another enormous drawback to it. Bitcoin requires the Bitcoin mining process. It requires the use of very powerful supercomputers, which in turn utilize a tremendous amount of electricity. And this is giving this new currency, this new virtual currency, an enormous carbon footprint. Pando Daily, PANDODAILY, one word, of December 16th of 2013, has a story, Bitcoin Has a Dark Side. Its Carbon Footprint, by Michael Carney, C as in cat, A-R-N-E-Y. His article excerpts, Bitcoin may be making a few people wealthy, but it is killing us all. The cryptocurrency that's caught the world by storm has a very dark side, its carbon footprint. At today's value of roughly $1,000 per Bitcoin, the electricity consumed by the Bitcoin mining ecosystem has an estimated carbon footprint, or total greenhouse gas emissions, of 8.25 megatons, 8,250,000 tons of CO2 per year, according to research by bitcarbon.org. That's 0.03 of the world's total greenhouse gas output, or roughly equivalent to that of the nation of Cyprus. If Bitcoin's value reaches $100,000, that impact will reach 3% of the world's total, or that of Germany. By the way, Germany is the world's fourth largest economy. I should also perhaps interject at this point, for people not familiar with Bitcoin, the whole lure, so to speak, of Bitcoin in terms of wealth acquisition is that, in fact, it is enormously deflationary, as we looked at in For the Record 764. Instead of inflation, where a currency loses its value and it would take, you know, $1,000 to buy a sandwich, Bitcoin is subject to deflation to the point where each Bitcoin dramatically increases in value. That is the appeal of it for people that get in on the ground level, is that basically your investment increases in value. So as we take a look at the enormous carbon footprint of Bitcoin, bear in mind that increasing the value is exactly what its proponents and users are looking to do. Again, resuming and repeating what we saw, if Bitcoin's value reaches $100,000 per Bitcoin, that impact, the carbon footprint, will reach 3% of the world's total, or that of Germany. At $1 million, which seems farcical, but which may not be out of the realm of possibility given the artificially limited Bitcoin supply, this impact rises to 8.25 gigatons, or 30% of today's global output of carbon and greenhouse gases, equivalent to that of China and Japan combined. In other words, the world's second and third largest economies. Not too good, folks. The economic columnist and prize-winning economist Paul Krugman has a column about Bitcoin, which begins with analysis of Bitcoin mining and some of the largest computer operations to mine Bitcoins are set up in Iceland because of the fact that it has cheap electricity due to the presence of thermal dynamics, which have been used to generate electricity, and also the fact that Iceland is, of course, very cool. What Paul Krugman notes in this column is the similarities between the underlying theoretical premise of Bitcoin and that of gold. And again, I want to note that Edward Snowden and the elements associated with the Ludwig von Mises Institute and Ron Paul advocate a return to the gold standard, which, from a practical standpoint, if that were to happen, would collapse the world's economy. And again, read the book Gold Warriors by Peggy and Sterling Seagrave if you think that's a good idea. Following column by Paul Krugman from the New York Times of December 22nd of 2013, Bits and Barbarism by Paul Krugman, it reads in part as follows. After discussing a gold mining operation in Indonesia, Paul Krugman comments, "The second money pit is a lot stranger. The Bitcoin mine and Reykjanesbær, Iceland, that's R-E-Y-K-J as in John, A-N-E-S-B-A-E-R. Bitcoin is a digital currency that has value because, well, it's hard to say exactly why, but for the time being, at least, people are willing to buy it because they believe other people will be willing to buy it. It is, by design, a kind of virtual gold, and like gold, it can be mined. You can create new bitcoins, but only by solving very complex mathematical problems that require both a lot of computing power and a lot of electricity to run the computers. Hence, the location in Iceland, which has cheap electricity from hydropower and an abundance of cold air to cool those furiously churning machines. Even so, a lot of real resources are being used to create virtual objects with no clear use. The third money pit is hypothetical. Back in 1936, the economist John Maynard Keynes argued that increased government spending was needed to restore full employment. But then, as now, there was strong political resistance to any such proposal. So Keynes whimsically suggested an alternative. Have the government bury bottles full of cash in disused coal mines and let the private sector spend its own money to dig the cash back up. It would be better, he agreed, to have the government build roads, ports, and other useful things, but even perfectly useless spending would give the economy a much-needed boost. Clever stuff, but Keynes wasn't finished. He went on to point out that the real-life activity of gold mining was a lot like his thought experiment. Gold miners were, after all, going to great lengths to dig cash out of the ground, even though unlimited amounts of cash could be created at essentially no cost with the printing press. And no sooner was gold dug up then much of it was buried again in places like the gold vault of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, where hundreds of thousands of gold bars sit, doing nothing in particular. Keynes would, I think, have been sardonically amused to learn how little has changed in the past three generations. Public spending to fight unemployment is still anathema. Miners are still spoiling the landscape to add to idle hoards of gold. Keynes dubbed the gold standard a barbarous relic, unquote. By the way, again, Edward Snowden is a big fan of returning to the gold standard as well as getting rid of Social Security. We're going to come back to that in For the Record 771, the next installment, the next exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. But again, note, as Paul Krugman writes, Keynes dubbed the gold standard a barbarous relic, unquote. Bitcoin just adds to the joke. Gold, after all, has some real uses, e.g. to fill cavities, but now we're burning up resources to create virtual gold that consists of nothing but strings of digits. I suspect, however, that Adam Smith would have been dismayed. Smith is often treated as a conservative patron saint, and he did indeed make the original case for free markets. It's less often mentioned, however, that he also argued strongly for bank regulation and that he offered a classic paean to the virtues of paper currency. Money, he understood, was a way to facilitate commerce, not a source of national prosperity, and paper money, he argued, allowed commerce to proceed without tying up much of a nation's wealth in a dead stock, unquote, of silver and gold. So why are we tearing up the highlands of Papua New Guinea to add to our dead stock of gold, and even more bizarrely, running powerful computers 24/7 to add to a stock of dead digits? Talk to gold bugs, and they'll tell you that paper money comes from governments, which can't be trusted not to debase their currencies. The odd thing, however, is that for all of the talk of currency debasement, such debasement is getting very hard to find. It's not just that after years of dire warnings about runaway inflation, inflation in advanced countries is clearly too low, not too high. Even if you take a global perspective, episodes of really high inflation have become rare. Still, hyperinflation hype springs eternal. Bitcoin seems to derive its appeal from more or less the same sources as gold, plus the added sense that it's high-tech and algorithmic, so it must be the wave of the future. But don't let the fancy trappings fool you. What's really happening is a determined march to the days when money meant stuff you could jingle in your purse. In tropics and tundra alike, we are, for some reason, digging our way back to the 17th century. I have noted in our discussions of Eddie the Friendly Spook that the Ludwig von Mises Institute, which is the wellspring in the U.S., of the Austrian School of Economics, much beloved to Ron Paul, Rand Paul, Eddie the Friendly Spook, the Peach Fuzz Fascist Snowden. It also is something that even the European Central Bank has cited as the foundation for the theory underlying Bitcoin. The following is from Forbes magazine of November 3rd of 2012, an article by John Matonis, M-A-T as in Thomas, O-N as in Nancy, I-S as in Sam, again writing for Forbes magazine. ECB, or the European Central Bank, quote, roots of Bitcoin can be found in the Austrian School of Economics. This article reads in part, the European Central Bank has produced the first official central bank study of the decentralized cryptographic money known as Bitcoin. That paper is titled Virtual Currency Schemes. Ignoring for a moment the ECB's condescending and derogatory use of the virtual currency phrase and scheme phrase, the study proposed at least one landmark achievement in claiming that, quote, the theoretical roots of Bitcoin can be found in the Austrian School of Economics, unquote. The ECB forever linked Bitcoin to the proud economic heritage of Menger, Mises, and Hayek, as well as to the Austrian business cycle theory. This recognition is also a direct testament to the monetary theory work of Friedrich von Hayek, who inspired many with his 1976 landmark publication of The Denationalization of Money. Bitcoin fully embodies the spirit of denationalized money as it seeks no authority for its continued existence and it recognizes no political borders for its circulation. Indeed, according to the report, proponents see Bitcoin as, quote, a good starting point to end the monopoly central banks have in the issuance of money, unquote, and again quoting, inspired by the former gold standard, unquote. By the way, I would note that Germany became the first country to recognize Bitcoin as a valid medium of transaction, and the German official who was commenting on this specifically cited Friedrich von Hayek of the Ludwig von Mises milieu as the inspiration for this. Again, we are taking a look at the dovetailing between the milieu of Edward the Friendly Spook, Snowden, and that of Bitcoin. Eddie Snowden was a big fan of Ron Paul. He contributed money to Ron Paul's campaign. Ron Paul's top legal advisor for his 2012 presidential run, Bruce Fein, is the American attorney for the Snowden family and actually has set up a nonprofit corporation with Lon Snowden, Edward Snowden's father. The introduction of Bruce Fein to the Snowden family was apparently made by Rand Paul, the son of Ron Paul. As, by the way, too, we have noted that WikiLeaks and the Snowden operation are inextricably linked. In our next program, For the Record 771, we're going to take a look at just how intertwined the Snowden operation and the WikiLeaks operation are. Julian Assange of WikiLeaks is also a big fan of Ron and Rand Paul. Ron Paul is apparently very well disposed toward Bitcoin and is threatening that it might destroy the dollar, something that would no doubt be very pleasing to Ron Paul, who is a gold bug himself. He advocates a return to the barbarous relic of the gold standard. Ron Paul and the Ludwig von Mises Institute are in turn inextricably linked with the neo-Confederate movement, people seeking to break up the United States, and people who are in favor of slavery. From CNN Money of December 4th of 2013, the following is by Jose Paglieri, P as in Paul, A-G-L-I-E-R-Y, Ron Paul, Bitcoin could destroy the dollar. Imagine a world in which you could buy anything in secret. No banks, no fees, no worries inflation will make today's money worth less tomorrow. The digital currency Bitcoin promises all of these things, and while it's far from achieving any of them, the value is unstable and it's rarely used, some have high hopes. There will be alternatives to the dollar, and this might be one of them, said former U.S. Congressman Ron Paul. If people start using bitcoins en masse, quote, it will go down in history as the destroyer of the dollar, Paul added. It's unlikely that Bitcoin will replace the dollar or other government-controlled currencies, but it could serve as a kind of universal alternative currency that is accepted everywhere around the globe. Concerned about the dollar's inflation? Just move your cash to bitcoins and use them to pay your bills instead. Tired of hefty credit card fees? Bitcoin allows transactions that bypass banks. Yes, accept it now. This is their commentary. As we are seeing, it looks like transaction fees are the future of Bitcoin profitability. Also, although Bitcoin is not going to be subject to inflation, it is subject to deflation, massive deflation, as well as all kinds of other ills. And the peril currently facing the global economy is that of deflation, not inflation. And by the way, I mentioned that the Snowden operation is inextricably linked with WikiLeaks. Guess who else is a big fan of Bitcoin? Julian Assange. This is from the Upstart Business Journal of April 19th of 2013. WikiLeaks Julian Assange. This is by Michael Del Castillo. WikiLeaks Julian Assange schools Google's Eric Schmidt on Bitcoin. In June of 2011, the founder of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, was holed up in Norfolk, England, awaiting word on his possible extradition to Sweden for rape charges. While there, he took a rather interesting house guest, Google chairman Eric Schmidt, who interviewed Assange on tape for his forthcoming book, The New Digital Age, due to be published April 23rd. Skipping down. Assange says, okay, Bitcoin is something that evolved out of the cypherpunks a couple of years ago, and it is an alternative, it is a stateless currency, and very important, actually. It does have a few problems, but its innovations exceed its problems. Now, there have been innovations going along these lines in many different lines of digital currencies, anonymous, untraceable, etc. People have been experimenting with this for over 20 years. The Bitcoin actually has the balance and incentives right, and that is why it is starting to take off. The different combination of these things, no central nodes, it is all point to point. One does not need to trust any central mint. If we look at traditional currencies such as gold, we can see that they have sort of interesting properties that make them valuable as a medium of exchange. Gold is divisible. It is easy to chop up. Actually, out of all metals, it is the easiest to chop up into fine segments. You can test relatively easily whether it is true or whether it is fake. You can take chopped up segments and you can put them back together by melting the gold. So that is what makes it a good medium of exchange. And it is also a good medium of value store because you can take it and put it in the ground and it is not going to decay like apples or steaks. The point is that Julian Assange is not only a big fan of Bitcoin, he is a fan of gold and he sees Bitcoin as a sort of virtual gold. Again, the barbarous relic, as it was termed by John Maynard Keynes, and frankly, I put a lot greater stock in the opinions of John Maynard Keynes or Paul Krugman than Edward Snowden or Ron Paul or Julian Assange. We made reference to the Winklevoss twins, early investors in Bitcoin and well-known from the Social Network movie that were involved with the early startup of Facebook. The following is a Reuters story from January 27th of 2014. This, in a nutshell, is what is wrong with Bitcoin. This is by Emily Flitter, F-L-I-T-T-E-R, prominent Bitcoin entrepreneur charged with money laundering. The vice chairman of the Bitcoin Foundation, a trade group promoting the adoption of the digital currency, has been charged by U.S. prosecutors with conspiring to commit money laundering by helping to funnel cash to illicit online drugs bazaar Silk Road. Charlie Shrem, S-H-R-E-M, who had financial backing from the Winklevoss twins and is well known as one of Bitcoin's biggest global promoters, was arrested on Sunday at John F. Kennedy International Airport in New York, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan said on Monday. Shrem, who is also charged with operating an unlicensed money-transmitting business, appeared in U.S. District Court in Manhattan on Monday and was released on $1 million bond. And again, he was allegedly laundering money for the Silk Road Network that we looked at in For the Record 760 and 764. An article from the New York Times of January 19th of 2013, Eagle Scout Idealist Drug Trafficker by David Siegel goes into the Silk Road. And once again, we're looking at a possible dovetailing of the network of Eddie the Friendly Spook and that of Bitcoin. After discussing Ross Ulbricht's affinity for Ron Paul and for the Ludwig von Mises School, David Siegel writes about the takedown of Silk Road. What is unclear is how the feds knew where Silk Road's servers were. Presumably they were rented in some faraway corner of the globe. Iceland, Latvia, and Romania are likely, according to experts who have studied the IP addresses. But the official vagueness has provoked speculation in academic circles and among security specialists. Was the NSA involved? Did this process involve breaking laws or violating constitutional rights? That issue will be at the heart of Ross Ulbricht's defense strategy, says Joshua L. Dratel, D-R-A-T-E-L, his lawyer. So it will be interesting to see if the NSA consideration winds up getting Silk Road or get Ross Ulbricht off the hook. Some of the things they were offering, skipping down, a services section with 159 offerings included a tutorial on hacking automated teller machines. More than 800 listings offered, quote, digital goods, unquote, such as hacked Netflix accounts, and 169 listings in forgeries, including driver's licenses and car insurance records. Anyone with minimal computer literacy could access this superstore of criminal mischief. Users needed only to install software for Tor, a network that hides IP addresses and bundles communications in layers of encryption. We are running very low on time, so I will simply synopsize what the other items are. These will be excerpted at length and in detail with the appropriate links in the written description for the Record 770, an article by Andy Greenberg in Forbes magazine of October 31st of 2013 talks about a guy named R. Cody Wilson, about whom we have spoken in the past. He is someone who is explicitly opposed to democracy, is a disciple of Hans Hermann Hoppe of the Ludwig von Mises School, who is explicitly opposed to democracy. And what he is trying to do is set up something called Dark Wallet, which will enable the use of bitcoins to be even more opaque to official or governmental supervision or insight or oversight. And bear in mind that Silk Road was offering tutorials on how to hack ATM machines, etc. Sounds like a lot of fun. And concluding with an item that we, two items, in For the Record program number 764, we took a look at the fact that, and also 760, the fact that the Max Planck Institute in Germany was working out a network that would be even more anonymous than the Tor network. This is an alternative anonymity network called Aqua, which combined with R. Cody Wilson's dark wallet would truly make the Bitcoin transactions completely impervious to government oversight or to oversight by law enforcement agencies. And of the Max Planck Institute, we read the following in the book, Germany Plots with the Kremlin. This entire book is available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. This was published in hardcover by Henry Schumann, copyright 1953. There is a quote from the Madrid circular letter by the Nazi government in exile that we dealt with at great length in For the Record 768. Though we are powerless at present, we have nonetheless never permitted ourselves to be disarmed spiritually and scientifically. German scholars are working unremittingly in Germany as well as abroad on great scientific plans for the future. Favorable circumstances enabled us to keep alive the greatest research organization of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute through a change of name. That is the Max Planck Institute that is now working on the Aqua Network, which with a dark wallet would enable Bitcoin transactions to be truly opaque. That concludes side two of For the Record program number 770, Bitcoinberg part three, Fool's Gold. This is being recorded on January 31st of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.